You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Fast-moving show on this hump day as we get you over the hump. Hope your week has gotten off to a good start. Terrific show lined up for you today. Ken LaVica, the voice of FAU, midday sports talk show host on ESPN in West Palm Beach. He'll join us in a little more than 30 minutes' time. Vern Lundquist on the show tomorrow. Vern Lundquist, and we'll also get you ready for baseball opening day with the radio voices of the Rays and the Marlins, Andy Fried and Kyle Seeloff. But right now, Pat Kirwan joins us. Having just spent 3 days at the owners' meetings in Orlando, he joins us once again, courtesy of Pinchers. Pat, how are you?
I'm doing great, fellas. Good to hear from you, and glad to be back. I always go to the owners' meetings with one question. At the end of these 3 days, sometimes 4 days, is the league going to be better, or is it going to be worse? And there were a number of things that I thought made the league better. And there's a couple of things I don't think helped the league at all. So it was more of a positive than a negative, I'll say that. But some years I get disappointed. I wasn't totally disappointed this year, and I thought there was more consensus about things. I mean, I still go back to when Belichick said, why don't we challenge everything? And they said no to that. And that was a negative year, but more positive than negative this year.
Well, what, break them down. What were the positive? What were the things that were the most positive to you, Pat?
That helped the league. Number one, in no particular order, trade deadline. This is something we've talked about on this show many times. And I think they're ready to push it back even another week once they get to 18 games. But to push it back, they're getting closer where I think it's realistic. John Mara said, we looked at all the other sports. And we realized our trade deadline is too early. And we decided it's time to do something more innovative. So that I loved. The injured return, you know, you put a guy on IR in the summertime, he could never come back. Now you can bring two of those guys back. And now we have unlimited transactions to bring guys back. No more, oh, he can't come back. We already fulfilled our quota. So I love that. The third quarterback on the practice squad, no more of that garbage that we had where he has to come up. He's got to be active. I like that. The kick return, I talked to Rizzi and Fossil, the guys who are the engineers of the whole thing. After I listened to them, I do like it. And here's why. We're going to go from a play that was insignificant. I know you guys talked about this probably yesterday, but we're going to have 2,000 returns. That's their guesstimate. And that's 2,000 more real plays and more chances. And I said to Mike Tomlin while he was sitting with me, I said, you know, you need to get up out of this chair and go sign Cordarrelle Patterson. And they did. And they didn't do it because of me. He started laughing and winked at me. It was a good thing we were on radio. And, of course, Arthur Smith had the guy. And so that's the kind of guy that's going to be back there. We discussed – Bill Cowher and I are going to have a long talk today. He's got all the information now, and he's trying to figure out what he'd do if he was coaching it. So I like all that. I love the third replay, but it's not enough. It's kind of in that minus plus area. Just give them three replay, you know, opportunities. Then why do they get rewarded or punished if the officials are screwing things up? But here's the things I don't like. I don't like a game on Christmas, two games. I don't like that. I think that's bad for the league on a Wednesday. It's greedy. We're going to be playing football almost 7 days in a row. What else don't I like? I don't like the Brazil game on Peacock. And then Peacock starts bragging that all these people renewed. No, they didn't. They didn't read their internet email about renews. Don't like that. The replay game expired. This is the kind of stuff that gets you in trouble. We all know that there's a delay. All you need is a buzzer. But now we're going to have stop the game and let someone look at the clock again. Game stoppages and penalties, not fan of. And the one thing about the hip drop, which we can get into, was John Mara said, we've been assured that they're not going to call this all the time. They're going to look at this as a frequency from the way they look at what you and I, the three of us, would call spearing. You know how the helmet, and they only called it 8 times last year. They don't think they're going to call it a lot, but they think they're going to fine it a lot. So I'm okay with that.
All right, a couple of questions. back to replay. There was talk about they're now going to allow, whether you call it eye in the sky, someone in New York, just someone somewhere, not on the field, that's going to be able to quickly review roughing the passer and whether or not, you know, I mean, I thought there were three or four calls they were talking about allowing either a challenge or further review of. Did they pass that?
I did not see that passed.
Okay.
But the eye in the sky should be in the stadium, and it should be, as we've talked about many times, an older official that can't run anymore, that's got a great brain for the game, and he's been officiating for 30 years. Pay the guy a ton of money and have him in charge of the crew. And I know a couple of owners have told me that's what they want, but no one ever puts it up as a proposal. I think they're afraid it will never pass, but that's what I want, and hopefully someday we'll see it.
Let's go back to the
I don't want an eye in the sky in New York. They've already proven they fail.
Let's go back to the kickoff. And, Pat, I thought yesterday I thought it was quirky. I thought it was a bad idea. And like you, I talked to Mike Westhoff yesterday for about 45 minutes. And by the time I was done talking to him, I'm like, okay, I'm in. We're going to get a – we took a non-play. We've made it a play. And talking to him, he's already working on, you know, concepts and designs. You said Mike Tomlin is – it gets these coaches, it gets their juice flowing a little bit, doesn't it?
Dan Campbell, for starters, he loved it. And he just likes anything – where if you're working on it and you're committed to the kind of personnel, extra personnel you're going to put on your roster that are core special teamers, we talked about the kind of guys that are going to be on it. You know, on the return unit now, the way it's set up, you could have linemen out there. Anyone who blocks at the linebacker level, guards go down on linebackers, tight ends go down on those kind of guys can be on the unit. You're going to be too deep and you can need a power player. That's why Steelers grabbed Patterson as fast as they did. And the cover unit, you know, this was Todd Bowles said it to me. You know, what you're looking for are guys that know how to beat, like attack a defensive end. A lot of those guys, why? Because they have to swim the tackle to get to the quarterback. They know how to get off a block. They know how to play on an edge of a player. Wide receivers that beat press. Those guys can be your, you know, your cover back guys. Bill Cowher has already said to me, he goes, you cannot rush 10 guys flat. They'll break through and score because there's no one back there but the kicker. So he goes, you got to send him in waves. One of the things I said wasn't to Tomlin. Who did I say it to? And it might have been Dan. I said, first off, without even looking at it, I'm going to kick into the corner, and I'm going to tell my front, we're kicking right corner, slant right. We're just going to bring that whole front right to the right corner, pin him in, and not let them out and try to get tackles. So right away, someone said, well, they'll throw it to the other returner. I go, go ahead and do that. We'll intercept that one. You go, he's the backside guy of a slant is going to hold. He's going to mark that guy. So they're already talking about 100 different ways they're going to have returns, which is what we're going to like. And they admitted, Rizzi and our friend Fossil, Johnny Fossil, said, yeah, the icing on the cake was no returns in the 13 in the Super Bowl, and that was the end of it. And Roger basically said, fix it. And they had been working on it.
He's Pat Kerwin. All right, NFL Radio's Moving the Chains, which is weekdays 3 to 7. He's also part of CBS's NFL Today Show. Pat joining us once again, courtesy of Pinchers. Pinchers, Tampa to Key West, all points in between. Pinchers, where you can't fake fresh. All right, let's talk about who's going to play on Christmas. We came up with the Saturday before Christmas, we believe, looking at the calendar, is the first Saturday that the NFL starts putting games on Saturday. And so we think, and usually they play a triple header, so we think four of those six teams are then going to play on Wednesday, because that would be the equivalent of playing on a Sunday and playing Thursday night football. But Pat, if you think about it, that means that those four teams – are going to play three games in 11 days.
That's correct. And I mean, as one coach said to me with a smile on his face, he goes, you don't think they ever ask us about this stuff, do you? It was the 28 million viewers. No, you're right. They are taking the Saturday teams. And John Mara said it to me, because they're taking the Saturday teams. And, you know, you're also getting pretty close to division games, right? You're getting really close to the start of division play. Hopefully it's not all division play. Because those games at Christmas are going to be crucial for people getting in and out of the playoffs. But, yeah, they're going to take four of those teams from Saturday, and they're going to play them on Wednesday. Not real excited about it.
Well, also, I mean, that's a real disadvantage. I mean, that's something that, you know, I know we can, and me, I'm the most guilty of it, can overanalyze the schedule more than anyone. But let me tell you, if all of a sudden you look at the schedule and you're one of those four teams that's going to play three games in 11 days at that point of the season, my goodness. I mean, Pat, I'll say this. To me, if the NFL's all in on, and we know they want an 18th game, I really think they need to do double bye weeks.
Oh, they will. When it comes to 18, they will. They're not going to do it with 17. They will do it with 18, and they'll be happy to do it.
Pat, you did just kind of.
When that comes, it'll happen.
You did just kind of slide in when I said the good and the bad. You slid in the 18th game. How close are we to an 18th game?
Good. We're very close. What drives them? Why are we playing on Christmas?
Money.
And because of the attendance, and we're destroying the NBA for all you. You might as well cancel your conversations with NBA guys. They took a heavy blow yesterday, Christmas Day. They thought it was a one-timer. It's not. It's gonna happen more often. But I think the league understands. But you know, the negotiating point for the union, if they were smart, I'm not sure they are, would be in expanded rosters. And not letting the league say, yeah, okay, we'll add two guys to the roster. No, we want five roster spots. We want to go to 58 guys. And now when all these games come bumping up here, and we want on game day, they should be asking for a lot of things, like, you know, active game day roster stuff. Because remember, when those guys are not playing, we all sit here and go, you know, you're paying them, you ought to play them. They're also not working towards their incentives. They're not. You know, a guy needs two more sacks and he's not on the active roster late. So I think there's a lot of reasons, but they'll get to 18 pretty soon. We have too many vendors now. You got too many places that want to broadcast and pay the league tons of money.
10 seconds. Why'd they go with Peacock? I mean, was that strictly cash?
Yeah.
Or a half a second, whichever one you need, Pat.
Right, 10 seconds or a half a second, whichever you need. It's Pat Kerwin, NFL Radio.
9 seconds, you got something else?
No, we'll just promote you if that's okay. NFL Radio's Moving the Chain, CBS's NFL Today Show. More with Pat Kerwin, 10-second answers or less, coming up.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Our remaining moments with Pat Kerwin. Got about 10 minutes left with Pat. Ken LaVica, the voice of FAU, sports talk show host out of West Palm Beach. He will join us. Where do the Owls go from here in about 15 minutes' time? Pat, of course, hosts his own show with Jim Miller, called Moving the Chains on NFL Radio, weekdays 3 to 7. During the season, he does the show on Saturdays as well. And then on Sundays, he spends time with CBS and the NFL Today Show. Pat joining us once again, courtesy of Pinchers, Tampa to Key West, all points in between Pinchers, where you can't fake fresh. All right, let's talk a little personnel here and some stuff that's happened in recent days. Why did the Chiefs only get a third and a 7 for Legarius Sneed?
Well, the third is not even till next year, which is even more watered down. It's all about the contract, right? They didn't want to pay what it was. There's two things, and I think they like someone on their roster, and they intend on fulfilling. And I guarantee you, Spags said, "We can play without him." If Spags went in there and said, "Without him, we can't even play our coverages," I think they would have kept him.
No. I know the Chiefs also. They're looking at who they have to sign contractually, and you know, so I get it. The Chiefs made a financial decision. How come they were only able to get a third and a 7th, though?
Yeah, I got asked that question by Steve Cohen the other day. And I go, Steve, and I talked to Andy Reid Sunday night. We talked a little bit about it. He goes, hey, you know how business is. But I think this. I think they would never trade him in their division. So that eliminates a couple of teams that really know him well. I think that's part of it. I was surprised they traded him in the conference. But I think they couldn't afford to pay him what he wanted. I thought they should have gotten more, so I'm with you on that. But here's what I say all the time. You get what's the best offer out there, and that was it. That means no one else was offering better than that. Think about that.
I wonder, kind of like with Fields, I wonder if both the Chiefs and the Bears had better offers on the table at the beginning of the business year, didn't pull the trigger on deals, and then 2 weeks went by and people started using up their cap space and draft capital and what have you, and then those deals were gone.
I don't think so. I think there's still plenty of guys with cap space that could have said, you know what, let's wait. And when everyone's fizzling out of cap space, we'll have enough to go get them. To me, it's like the compensation package, as pathetic as it is, was the best one they could find. And that I would have turned it down, saying, if that's all we can get, I'm just might as well play them on the tag. And they didn't. They decided not to do that. But this is a team that Andy Reid, at no time when I was talking to him, had any anxiety on his face about all this. He was happy to move on. I know there's a guy that they like that no one really sees because he doesn't play much, but in probing that subject a little bit deeper, I said, you can't tell me you're just counting on the draft. And, you know, they said, well, there's a guy we do like, kind of like him. You know, no one knows him, but we like him. And are they famous for doing that? Yeah, they like that Nazee Johnson, 7th round pick. And he's not a big guy. He's 5'10", I think, out of Marshall, but when you do these things, A, you have financial restrictions, which I would have just kept. You got him on a tag, just play him on the tag. You got all until July to get him negotiated if you want. You can always threaten the tag next year and then trade him. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think it's a head-scratcher for me. It's too good of a player to get that lousy compensation.
Are you buying this J.J. McCarthy racing up the draft boards that he could be possibly picked fourth?
No. I think there's as much negative vibe when I talk to guys evaluating him. And I'm not going to get here and bash the guy. I just don't think that he is worthy of that spot. When I hear names like Christian Ponder, type player, some of his interview stuff has been on the borderline of bizarre. It sounds like he's the son of Jim. You know, in the cold shower thing, I take a challenging cold shower. No one wants to hear all this stuff. The more he talks, the more I'm going, 30-year-old veterans are going to go, what's with this dude? No, don't see it. And he's a fastball thrower. This is a league where you need 3-4 different releases. You got to have touch. You got to put it over the linebackers' heads. You can't Kaepernick every throw. And he's a hardball thrower. So this stuff guys don't think. Has he been challenged? And I got told to watch the TCU game. I watched the game. No. And I couldn't believe that was steer me to the game that gave you the reason to love this guy. Watch TCU. I watched TCU. I hated him more. No.
All right. Speaking of quarterbacks in the state of Texas, how about Jarrah's comments about Dak that basically we're just going to let this sucker play out? All right. I mean, is it possible that Jerry is basically thrown down the gauntlet to Dak and said, you know, we could move on from you after 2024.
Well, in negotiating 101, there's a chapter called Threaten the Client. The player is laughing. I believe he's laughing at that. And I don't think he even thinks it's true. I think he knows if they actually want to go through with this, I'll get a job so fast. If Kirk Cousins can get the deal he got, what would Dak Prescott get? A healthy Dak, younger Dak Prescott. Kirk Cousins hasn't done anything that says he's better than Dak Prescott. So there's going to be another Atlanta Falcon team out there next year. And if they want to set him free and take the big smash in the face for cap space destruction, I think Dak knows, you know, Jerry's just frustrated that I can't get a deal done. So he's threatening him, but he's not threatening him in a bad way. Everybody knows he likes Dak, but Dak is not going to jump up and give him a deal. He's not going to because he saw the Kirk Cousins deal. We can figure out where he'd go. He's not a bad player.
So you think that Dallas and Dak will get something done before the start of the season or no?
I think Jerry will succumb to whatever it is to get Dak done. Because Jerry, as I say this on the show about once a year, is I had an owner in his age bracket. They know what it means to start over. Now, they haven't gone anywhere for 28 years, but if you start over the rookie quarterback, and I don't think the draft's very good next year, and I love saying that because no one knows. I don't know. But if Deion's kid's the top quarterback, I would not be getting rid of Dak.
It is interesting, though, because his cap hit this year is around 59.
Right.
And so in theory, even if they, you know, re-signed him next year, his cap hit wouldn't be as much next year. So it's interesting that Jerry's, you know, going this route. I mean, they've done nothing in free agency. They didn't negotiate Dak's deal down so they could do more things in free agency. They're not even picking up, you know, like the Tre'Davious White who signs yesterday, 1 year, $8.5 million. They're not even picking up those kind of guys on the back end of free agency. I mean, this, and Jerry's talking like, you know, we're thrilled with where we are. I mean, is he in La La Land?
I think so. No one's buying it. He's already back, right? He's not really talking we're all in anymore. I think his definition of all in has had to be evaluated, and he failed that test. So, no, this happens to guys. It happened to me. You get yourself bound in with contracts, and you don't have the power to manage your own football team anymore. The big fat contracts are managing your team, and Jerry is acting like he's still running it.
Pat Kerwin. You can hear him weekdays on NFL Radio, 3 to 7. The show is called Moving the Chains, and he joins us twice a week for most of the year, actually, courtesy of Pinchers from Tampa to Key West and about a dozen locations in between Pinchers where you can't fake fresh. Well, get some rest. Play around
the
golf.
You tell me once a week in the off season, and then you tell me there's no off season. So I figured it out.
No. Actually,
June.
I love you.
June.
Actually, we try.
Thank you, Mark.
We try to bring you down to once a week after the draft, and you berate us and say, "No, I want to come on twice." Tell
well,
the
I
truth.
I love coming on with you guys. It's always a stimulating conversation and gets me ready for a lot of other things during the day. And I love 10-second opportunities, and I always give 9 back to you.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton only on the Florida Sports Network.
Minutes until we reach the top of the hour, and then we're done along the network. The Diamond District bonus hour is simply an hour away. Miller and Moulton, MillerandMoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. Ken Levick is kind enough to join us. He is the play-by-play voice of the FAU Owls. He also does a midday sports talk show on West Palm Beach on the ESPN radio station. You can follow Ken on X at KLV 106.3. KLV 106.3. Ken, it's David and Mark. How the hell you been?
Gentlemen, it is great to speak with you. Glad that you're you gave me the call. Always good to chat with you guys.
By the way, there's a buddy of mine, Greg, who goes all the way back to your days at Valpo. And he texted me and said, beers are on me if you work Valpo into the conversation. So, Ken, that's why I'm bringing up your Valpo pass, because Greg doesn't buy very often, and now I'm getting beers.
There you go. Beer them, damn it. I love it. That's that right there, the fact that you just bulldozed your way into it without any nuance, that's the proper way to do that.
All right. Ken, FAU post Dusty May. You know, we watched it here. And where I am, FGCU had Andy Enfield and things. They kept on keeping on, but obviously they've not had the success that they did with Andy. And I don't know if that ever could happen again at a school in the A-Sun. But FAU has built something over the past couple of years, and now Dusty May is gone. What's next for FAU?
Whew, that is a phenomenal question, and it's very much a crossroads right now. And in fact, I was just kind of exchanging messages with a couple of the players last night. And I know that Dusty made the comment in his press conference when asked about if he was going to bring any of his FAU players to Michigan. Dusty said, hey, I want that program to continue to succeed. I'm going to do what I can to ensure that that continues. I don't see any of the names in the portal, and I was talking with some of the guys last night, and really it was, we're waiting. We're waiting to see what happens. We're waiting to see what happens. You can decipher that however you want. Dusty May had told me on my show a couple of days ago that he would like to see a hire come from the interior, from the inside, because this is obviously a unique job that still features some pratfalls, not the greatest budget in all of college basketball by a long shot. And so I don't know. I don't know what's next. I do know that this is, I never thought that this would be as an attractive a college basketball job as it's become, yet here we are. But I would expect by week's end, there's probably an indication of who the coach is.
Well, Ken, let's talk about this. If you think about it, so Lane Kiffin had his three-year run, very successful, and then Dusty comes in and has a very successful basketball run. So in the two major sports, FAU's had some real moments here over a 6 to 8 year period of time, but you made it sound as if financially they may not be best prepared for the college sports world that we're now in.
It's tough because there's this dynamic at play for the entire existence since football began. Florida Atlantic was a football school. The vast majority of the resources went to football, and the resources were scant at times. That said, there's been a massive, massive, massive push over the last 10, 15 years, especially now, though, as we've gotten into the NIL era, and FAU has now twice switched conferences in a in the matter of 7 years. First the Conference USA from the Sun Belt, and then the American. A huge push to make sure that the football program is financed in a way in which it can continue to be competitive, and that really, really kicked into overdrive when Lane Kiffin came in. The recent basketball success came so out of nowhere that now FAU is trying to scramble to make sure resources are going to that. And I'm telling you, last year, and just to give you an indication, yeah, the financial situation, Florida Atlantic, of the teams that were top 10 seeds in the field of 64, FAU by a wide margin had the smallest the smallest budget of any program, and that's up infinitely from where it was even a year ago. So there's just a lot of work to do. You're trying to do 20 years worth of work in about a 2 year span because your basketball program came out of nowhere. So that's the challenge right now. It's only going to improve. There's consistent money coming in now. Going to another tournament's going to bring more money in. That said, they're still playing a catch-up game where football, which got the vast majority of the resources, spent a lot of time stockpiling.
So have these two tournaments, the two tournaments runs have obviously put the basketball school on the map, but financially not there yet. What's the next step with this coach that gets the job? Because it sounds like it's not just whoever the coach is. It sounds like whoever, you know, the current AD has to continue to raise the bar from a financial standpoint.
Yeah, now luckily there is continuity there. Brian White remains the athletic director. He signed a contract extension last year as well once Dusty May got his. Brian White, whose brother now, Mike White, is in the semifinals of the NIT. He's the head coach of Georgia, and that's where Dusty May and Brian White went way back, because Dusty was on Mike White's staff at Louisiana Tech, then at Florida before he came to FAU. So there's a lot of familiarity with Brian White and what needs to be done. I'm sure you guys noticed on television this year, the arena got a complete facelift in the offseason, and that played extremely well on CBS, ESPN, all the networks that FAU was on this year. So that process is underway. It has begun. There are several NIL opportunities that these FAU players have been enjoying since the Final Four run. So there's a framework in place. It's just a work in progress at this point, and you're continuing to try to build. If you're Brian White, I'm sure you're looking at somebody who already maybe has a relationship with the players, or you know who's going to come in and be able to immediately make connections with these players. Because if you look at this roster, if FAU is able to keep the players who are eligible to come back next year. Nelly Davis, Player of the Year in the American. Elijah Martin, co-preseason Player of the Year in the league. Vlad Goldin, who in my mind is maybe the most improved big in all of college basketball. All these guys can come back next year. There's no reason why FAU can't compete for a conference championship again and maybe, just maybe, compete for an at-large bid. But you need someone who can come in and say, all right, let's go ahead, take a deep breath. Dusty's not here any longer, but we have the core. Let's go win some more basketball games. That's really the short-term key right now.
Ken Lavica, the voice of the FAU Owls. He also does middays on ESPN 106.3 in West Palm Beach. And, well, he works it into his X handle, KLV 106.3. KLV 106.3 is how you can follow Ken Lavica. All right, let's talk a little tournament. You know, I know you're getting ready for a broadcast and what have you, and I don't know if you really, you know, saw much of UConn, but your thoughts as to the Sweet 16, and you think anybody's got anything for the Huskies?
I have a hard time believing this thing can steamroll through two consecutive tournaments the way it has. It almost defies belief in this modern era of college basketball that one team can be so imminently dominant and inevitable. But man, you watch them and they are absolutely ridiculous. They have the size, they have the shooting, they have the defense. They're able to stick with you man to man at all times. If they run into little seams of trouble, they'll switch to zone and snuff you out and overwhelm you. I do think a team will be able to have an answer for them. That team is not going to be San Diego State. I do think that UConn's probably going to go to the Final Four, but a team that I find myself going back to, just because I saw them up close and I saw them at the peak of their powers, what they can do when everything is clicking, and now you see they're the number one offense in the nation, according to KenPom, and that's Illinois. I think that there's something there with Illinois. If they can string together any semblance of a defensive effort in the next four games for them, I think Illinois is a real interesting option in discussion about a team that can make a run and put themselves in a position. Now, obviously, that would then keep UConn out of the Final Four. So, I don't know. Guys, there's something about Illinois, the way they score, Damask and Shannon, and how they get to the rim, their length. There's something there with Illinois. I'm really, really interested in seeing them. Though they play their Sweet 16 game at 10:10 Eastern time, so I may have to catch up with what they did over the weekend.
Well, there's no doubt there. But the problem with Illinois for me, too, is just that Iowa State game, because that's a rock fight. And Iowa State defensively, if there's a team that can shut Illinois down, Iowa State's that type of team with how they're stifling defense, the way that they play. I think that's going to be an interesting game. But Illinois can definitely score. Give me another team not named UConn that you think can win the whole thing.
All right. So I was actually going through this yesterday. And so obviously, like I said, there's Illinois. But I also really, really like the way that Marquette is put together. I saw Marquette up close last year twice. Saw them in Columbus. Saw them lose against Michigan State in the round of 32. But I really think getting over that hump, getting to the Sweet 16, Marquette, they've got the scoring. They're a very good defensive team, and I think now they believe, and I think that they are favorable, as good a story as NC State is. I think everything is favorable for Marquette to get into the Elite Eight, and I like the way that things shape up for them, especially considering Tennessee has flaws. Houston, I need to see it before I can believe it, that they can get to a Final Four. Gonzaga, this is not the same Gonzaga team, though they played well against a six-man Kansas squad. Not the same Gonzaga. And with Purdue, if you press them, I will continue to push this narrative. If you press them, you can find a way to beat them. Marquette can do that. I think Marquette could find themselves in Arizona.
And they draw NC State in the Sweet 16. And then, well, in all likelihood, they'll get Houston. But who knows? We'll see if Duke can gain some toughness in the next couple days to battle Houston in the Sweet 16. Listen, final question, Ken. It surprised us, for whatever that's worth, that he chose Michigan over Louisville? Because one's a football school and one's a basketball school. Did it surprise you?
It did. It did, especially considering that Louisville is within an hour of where he grew up as well. And his whole family is still in that general area in Indiana. And I thought that that proximity was certainly going to help Louisville's case. But then after I thought about it, I think it really comes down to this for Dusty May, who is very, very committed to the influences that raised him and molded him and developed him into what he is now. You can take the boy out of the Big Ten, but you can't take the Big Ten out of the boy. When he was growing up in Indiana, worshiping Hoosier basketball, at the peak of his young sports fandom, which I think for any human being is the most intense part of their life when they're 8, 9, 10 years old, checking box scores back in the day like we used to when that was a thing. The Fab Five was at Michigan. There's that brand. There's the allure. There's still the mysticism around it. He did spend some time there. He lived in Ann Arbor when he coached for a season as an assistant at Eastern Michigan. But I truly think that this timing for him to get into the Big Ten at a program that has the resources, that's going to spend the money in an area he's relatively comfortable, but in a conference that he loves, I think that ultimately is why he went. And after I thought about it a little bit more, I thought that made a little bit more sense to me than Louisville.
Ken, continued success. We're very happy for you and all that you continue to achieve. Thanks for making time for us, and hopefully we can talk down the road.
Gentlemen, appreciate you. Just hit me up. Always good to talk.
Ken Lavica, the voice of the FAU Owls. Also middays, ESPN 106.3 in West Palm Beach. Follow him on X at KLV 106.3. KLV 106.3. Just flows.
You love saying that. You like his. You like his X handle better than Shane McNichols.
Well, because also when I say it, I think that it's like, you know, call into the show, KLV 106.3. Call in right now. We'll take the seventh caller, KLV 106.3. Yeah.
It does have a great flow to it. Like, yeah, I don't know if he put that much thought into it to where it's a perfect storm, but it is a great X handle.
I just hope he never has to work for another radio station. Because I know a guy whose email corresponds with the place he worked at, you know, like 10 years ago.
Yep. Still works, though. It's a unique email address. Nobody else has it, that's for sure.
Ken Lavica joining us on Miller and Moulton. If you miss any of the show, go to all the usual places, including millerandmoulton.com, to download it. Pretty solid little show. Little Seth Everett, little Pat Kerwin, little Ken Lavica today on the show.
How about tomorrow's show? Little Vern Lundquist, little voice of the Rays, Andy Freed, little voice of the Marlins, Kyle Seeloff.
Getting you ready for opening day.
Yeah. And talking to a broadcast legend as he's 2 weeks away from retiring. The Diamond District Bonus Hour's next.